Welcome to Oh My Pod. I'm Matt.
And I'm Omar. On this weekly podcast, we sip wine and spill tea with industry leaders who are making a big impact on our little baby earth.
Today, we are joined by Sarah Kunar, our own manager and co-founder of Platform Media and Management, one of the leading influencer marketing agencies right here in Toronto.
Today we chat about all things influencer marketing, female entrepreneurship, making it through the business world as a person of color, and so much more, honey.
So get comfortable, grab your glass of wine, and enjoy.
Today, we are joined by the gracious, the beautiful, the intelligent, Sarah Kunar.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Please tell us, first of all, who you are, where you're from, and just a little bit of backstory, because if people don't know who you are, enlighten them.
Okay, so my name is Sarah Kunar. I am from Toronto, Ontario. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually your manager.
She is our manager.
Whoa. I own this cute little company called Platform Media and Management, and we represent talent, specifically influencers. I'm doing the little quotations. And you two are part of our beautiful roster of Canadian, now, well, soon to be Canadian.
Hopefully.
You'll be Canadian soon.
Please, Canadian
talent. So, but before I was a magazine editor, mm-hmm. before that I was in journalism school, and before that I was just a cheerleader who liked to code websites.
Oh my God.
That's how it goes back and back and back. And before that, I was just a little child. I grew up right outside of Toronto. My family was really different than most. My dad is Indian and my mom's Italian, and my dad was an entrepreneur, so had a pretty fun childhood, basically hanging out in my dad's office. And yeah, so that's sort of what inspired me to be an entrepreneur. And I guess in terms of like how, like my background in terms of why I started Platform. When I was a magazine editor, I saw the expiry date on that because obviously advertisers were more and more interested in social media every day and less mm-hmm. and less in like television and print and even online magazines. And so I was working for a U.S. publication, and it was my job to source influencers for branded content partnerships. And I became friends with a bunch of influencers, and I was hiring them, and their management was really like not so great. And we would, you know, be talking, or we'd be out to dinner, the influencers and I, and they would be complaining about their management. And I would have like ideas like, oh, like maybe they could do this, or maybe they should start doing this, or, you know, and eventually people just started laughing and being like, well, why don't you just do it? And that's basically what brings me to where I am.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really like vague yes. and like short version of how it was, but that basically is how it all started.
And how many years ago was that?
That was about 4 years ago. We just had our 3-year anniversary for Platform. Yeah. So yeah, it's all pretty recent, but it's felt like forever. I think we've done 2,000 campaigns.
Wow.
Yeah.
2,000.
Yeah.
That's so many.
I know. I like when I read that, I thought that was a joke, but actually it makes sense based on how tired I am right now. Yeah.
Did you see it being that successful when you first started? Like, you knew the space was changing. Did you like look ahead and you were like, okay, Platform's gonna be such a big thing?
Well, when I, I'm just to kind of give you an idea, I'm turning 33 in 2 weeks. Yeah. I got my job as editor-in-chief of a magazine when I was 26. And I was coming into the job, like, I was on Instagram and like, I love social media. Yeah. It's like, it was fun. And so I was probably one of the youngest editor-in-chiefs in Canada. And so I was part of this like young crew of people who were really embracing social media. And I got some like backlash at the beginning because I was embracing social media a lot, and a lot of the other editors and writers weren't. So for example, like I would kind of put myself out there, you know, on social media more than other editors would. And the kind of complaint that I would get is like, you know, this isn't a vanity project. Like, it's not about us. It's about the reader. Mm. And don't say me when you're writing, and don't make it about you. And no one should even know who you are. You need to be in the background. And I was like, yeah, but I think the reader wants to know who's speaking to them. And I think if they feel connected to the writer or connected to the editor, they're more likely to like pick up the magazine.
Yeah.
And like, for example, like Anna Wintour, like you associate Vogue with her and her personality. Mm-hmm. And I felt like editors just like being behind the scenes and not putting themselves out there made the magazine seem a little bit more like, I don't know, like unknown.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
who's speaking to me? What's their voice? What do they care about? So I would put myself out there and like, you know, talk to the audience like as a friend would, kind of like the way bloggers were doing it,
mm-hmm.
because I saw that to be way more relatable. And in the like journalism space, that was like a big no-no.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, I feel like this is a good thing. And then our page views went up and things started to get better and people started to get interested. And I started to ask the writers to start using like me and I when writing and not just like write, you know, a typical like very like Jace journalism
yeah.
school article where you have to like be very separated from the article, but like talk about it from a personal view. And we had more essays and more opinion pieces. And I realized that the way magazines were and where they needed to go was more in the direction of kind of what bloggers were doing in that way. So I was always like, I always knew the strength that bloggers had and people who put themselves out there and their audience are there for the person. And so it was kind of natural that I started to like make friends and get more interested in the influencer space. And as the magazine readers started to dwindle, I found that getting influencers to like write a piece for us or get involved in some way helped bring readers to the magazine. They were obviously the ones who had the audience, right?
Yes.
Not us anymore.
Yes.
So as I saw that happening and we would have conversations with advertisers, the advertisers would be like, you know, one year they would say, okay, 90% of our budget is for magazines, 10% is for influencers. Cool. The next year, okay, we want 30% of our budget towards influencers.
Mm.
Cool. The next year, it was like 60%. So I saw this like every year it would go up like exponentially how much they would spend on influencers versus like print or online magazines. And so I thought, okay, well,
yeah.
I'm going to go where the money's going. So
yeah.
So I jumped ship and I thought it would be really great in the influencer space to have like a management company that understood content and writing branded content for so long, I thought maybe I'd be that person.
Because at that time, how many influencer agencies were there in the city?
Not in the city, maybe one or two.
Okay.
One or two. There are like big corporations that had MCN. So what an MCN is like a YouTuber kind of, it's not like influencer management like in the way that we do it, but it's sort of a network that YouTubers can join, and then the when they join the network has like salespeople that sell advertising across the network of YouTubers.
Mm.
So that was happening because YouTube had been around for a long time, but someone managing like Instagrammers was very new.
Yeah.
So in the city, there might have been like one or two other agencies doing that. And then some in Vancouver and like maybe one in Montreal, like in terms of reputable ones, but it was super new. Now there's more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, I feel like whenever I speak to anyone about platform, people, you have an amazing reputation.
Oh, thank you.
And I feel like, yeah, anyone that we speak to who I didn't even know that they knew what platform was, but they know. They know.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the general public don't know, but I think the industry knows.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I'm very proud
even
of.
Even like meeting people at events and getting to know other influencers that are with other agencies, and we speak to them about platform, and they're like, whoa, I did not know that you were a platform. That's amazing. And that's a really humbling thing for like even me, because I'm like, oh my God, I'm part of something incredible.
Aww.
And it feels great for the both of us. Because, yeah, it's like a little home for us here. You've created such a great space for people like us. And We're thriving, all of us, aren't we?
Well, I was so excited. When Matt first reached out to me, like, it was hard not to. From Germany. So,
I reached out to Sarah. So, this is the story. I reached out to Sarah when I was still living in Berlin. We had just met, like, a couple months earlier. We were thinking about moving to Toronto. And I was like, I need someone to help me do this. Because the influencer scene in Europe, not a thing. There was nothing happening. So I reached out to Sarah and I was like, Sarah, do you want to represent this guy you don't know, you've never met? Here's my Instagram page, let's chat. And she was like, sure.
Yeah.
She was like, yes, okay, let's do it.
I mean, you weren't some rando. Like, yeah. You had
a presence.
Beautiful content. I found in Canada, there's not a ton of male, like,
no.
I mean, now it's very much changed. At mm-hmm. that time, mm-hmm. there wasn't a ton. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for something very specific. I wanted, like, someone who, A, had something to say. Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, like, I love your outfits.
Yeah,
or, like, you have great apps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if you're not talking about something or saying something, then eventually I'm going to unfollow because there's nothing here to keep me, like, to keep me around. And I'm always looking for people who are going to bring me value. And I think that goes back to, like, the magazine days. Like, you subscribe to the magazine that you get the most, like, from. I mean, it's nice to look at pictures, but, like, if something's, a magazine is, like, has really great information and teaches you something, then you like that, right? So you subscribe to it. That's really what I'm looking for in terms of, like, what we call digital storytellers. We don't love the word influencer. I think digital storyteller is the type of influencer we like. So I thought you were that person. Mm-hmm. And so I also, like, checked you out. I thought everything looks legit. So I just was hoping, like, you weren't, like, catfishing me. And you showed up and you're, like, a completely different person.
That would have been hilarious.
Yeah, but it ended up being okay. And I'm so happy about it. I feel like that was probably one of the best business decisions I've ever made.
Yeah. Going off of that, I want to talk about the roster. So platforms roster, if you look at the difference between the different rosters with, like, influencer agencies, it's very diverse. It's mm-hmm. There's many people of, like, different backgrounds, different ethnicities, sexualities. Was that a purposeful choice, like, from the beginning, bringing on influencers from different backgrounds to, like, tell different stories?
Even management, too. Like, yeah. It's truly so diverse.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both a strategic decision, a business decision, but also, like, a natural thing. Like, I think I was lucky to grow up in a very diverse family. So, for me, like, I think, okay. Here's how it goes. Let's just get to it.
Spill it.
I've seen some other agencies, whether PR or influencer agencies, where all the agents are, like, white and blonde.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if you think about who you follow on Instagram, if you are white and blonde, the likelihood is you're going to follow other people that have a similar hair type, a similar body type, mm-hmm. Who look good in the same makeup as you, because you're following people who you can relate to in a way. Mm-hmm. And so obviously, who they're already following on social media are probably going to be people that look like them. And so that's the people that they naturally are going to reach out to first when they're looking to recruit. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, I'm not going to lie, I reached out to a bunch of brown girls because it was like, that's who I followed. So for example, Karuna and Alistair from What We Wore were, like, one of the first people we signed mm-hmm. because that was just who I followed. I loved Karuna's style. And so that's like the natural way that diversity happened because, I was looking at people that I liked. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, like, our staff is diverse. So when new people come up, like, everyone's always sending in, oh, I saw this person, because everyone's different. They're all following different people. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, again, like, we're all the same race. We all look the same. And so we're all following the same people. But it's like everyone's, like, showing me, like, oh, look at this, mom and, wherever. And I'm like, oh my God, I would have never found that person before because they have completely different tastes that I do. So that was, like, the natural way. The strategic, like, business way is it doesn't make sense to have a roster of all the same thing because a lot of times brands are coming and they also are looking for something diverse for their campaign. So if we just have, like, 10 copies of the same person, mm-hmm. they'll be like, okay, I'll just take one because I don't need 10 of the same. Mm-hmm. So then we're just, not all brands are like that, but now more than ever, they're trying to be. And so I thought, okay, well, if I can give them a little bit of everything, then they can, when they're doing their campaign, they can touch every single like niche without having to leave our and go to another agency. So having a very diverse roster of people of all ages, like all ethnicities, all like everything, I think is kind of opens it up so they can come in and go, oh, okay, I can kind of do everything in one place.
Yeah.
So that's the business strategic side of it. But I just think like that's the way it should be.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I feel like with Platform 2, it's not like no one's a copy-paste of each other. And I feel like in this industry that's so overly saturated, like it's just the worst. People think they can gain success by copying other people.
Yeah.
But that can only go so far. Like if you're not unique to your own voice and your own presence and believe in your own creativity, then you kind of won't go very far.
And there are a lot of copies of you guys. Oh, we see them every day.
Honey.
Yes, there are tons of copies of you, and they reach out to us for management, and then I go like, well, I've already, you know, like I have that. No, no more. But like, it's wonderful to see how many people you guys are like inspiring to like, you know, put their message out there and live their lives and share, you know, everything about it. I think that's really cool.
So. I love seeing people that like, I know I'll do like a really funky edit and then someone will like send me, like tag me in a photo that they've like done some witchcraft on, and I'm like, honey,
that's
fabulous.
Yeah.
Me, I'm the influencer now.
You are the influencer. Yeah.
But at some point we do all, I think we, everybody as a creator takes inspiration from other people, and then you eventually, like maybe you copy them at first, but then you mold that into your own as you come into your own voice. I think like I found a lot of my creativity from YouTubers back in the day. Mm-hmm. That's where I found like gay YouTube, and that's where I kind of like went into that realm. And then as I like developed as a blogger, I looked at other gay bloggers and Instagrammers, and I was like, okay, you're doing these things, like fashion guys are doing these things, like travel people are doing these things, and then I kind of made my own voice through that. And then it evolves.
I feel like at the beginning you talked a lot about what your branding was going to be.
And I had no idea. Like, because when I first started with Platform 2, and I was like, oh, like, I'm just doing this. Because also, like, because Matt does it, and I don't really know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything else. I don't know, like, and I researched on, like, in my spare time, all I used to do was just watch videos on how to edit and how to do Photoshop. And I self-taught myself everything that I know. I built a career out of photography now. Because of that.
Yeah.
And then I think it's also like not being scared to put yourself out there, because I look at photos sometimes, I'm just like doodling around, I like put lightning bolts everywhere and put flames in places, and I'm like, this is so weird, but it took me forever. I'm just gonna post it and see, and just whatever. And then I get amazing feedback, and I'm like, wow, I didn't expect that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of like a nice positive reinforcement in that way, but I also feel like, I found a creative niche that I've not seen, and I don't really see.
No, that much. And that's, it's so money. It's so great.
And in terms of like brand partnerships too, like I think Instagram, and I mean, one of the things that we wanted to ask you today as well is like how you think the industry has moved from when you started to now.
Oh, wow.
But like, I want to say that the influencer industry, like people aren't engaging with people who are holding like a product and being like, oh, like
Never.
This little product did this cool thing for me, it can do cool things for you too. People want to know your story as the storyteller.
Yeah.
And I think the both of us have been quite good at building a really great community and cultivating that since we've been in the city. And I mean, for me, I'm like, I get a campaign and I'm like, right, how can I make this weird? That's my first thought. And I mean, I did that Dyson Air campaign.
That was my favorite. Right?
And I was like, and I had this idea because I saw a few things whilst I was like doing Photoshop research in the past. And I was like, oh, that would be so good for this, this campaign. And then I told Matt and I was like, it's really, really weird. I feel like the brand won't go for it.
Mm.
And he was like, just do it. Like, just do it. Who will know? And I was like, okay. And then I executed it. I think pretty well, and then off it went, and
well, you kind of have to
loved
think,
it.
Did you guys ever watch Mad Men?
No.
So basically, it's the advertising industry. So you kind of have to, as influencers, put yourself as like, now you are like Don Draper. You are the advertising agency,
yes.
And so you know, Coca-Cola comes to you, and you're like, I have this idea.
Right.
that's the way that we want it to be. And I think what it was when we started is it was very prescriptive. Like, no, the brand is telling the influencer what to do. Yeah. And what I've been hammering home, and I go to all of the brands and I visit their offices and I talk to them and I do these like little TED Talks to them about how to create believable influencer campaigns. Mm. And I think influencers like became so big and became cool because it was like a thing in pop culture where, you know, finally there is someone who looks like me. Finally, yeah. There's someone I can trust. It's not a celebrity who's getting paid $1 million to do this. This is a real person. And then brands were like, oh, I want to be part of that. And then come in and ruin it.
Mm, right.
And then turn on you guys. Like, I don't know if you guys saw that Payless ad last Christmas where they basically... They did this ad where they had a bunch of influencers come to a store. They yes. changed the name to Palessi or whatever, made the prices of the Check shoes that. Like $1,000, and then tricked all the influencers to be like, wow, I love these shoes. And they were like, see, you can't even tell the difference. And it was basically a joke on influencers. Mm-hmm. And so I was, you know, doing my rounds at the brands, you know, the month after, and almost everywhere I went, they said, they were like, ha, 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 what did you think of that ad? Like, they thought it was so hilarious. And I said, well, it's your fault. Mm-hmm. I said, if you weren't telling influencers what to do, what to say, saying, I'm not going to give you this money unless you do A, B, and like C, that's why influencers are acting that way, is because you told them that's how they get paid. You don't get paid unless yeah. you know, bend over backwards and say you love it. Mm-hmm. And it's your fault that that's the way it is. You're causing this. It's not the influencers who are changing the way it is and making, you know, really blatant, overly branded ads. It's you guys.
Yeah.
So to now the brands now making fun of the influencers, I think that's so wrong when you caused the problem in the first place. Mm. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to change that. And I think, again, being from, you know, three people on our staff used to work for magazines. Like yeah. we've all written branded content, and it was always, you know, a mandate of ours and at the magazines to always like weave in the advertising in a really seamless way, mm-hmm. you know, by providing the readers with, you know, information, you know, interviewing a scientist, interviewing people about the product, how it works, so that when people are reading a post that is very much an advertiser's post, mm-hmm. They're getting some value from it.
Yeah, totally.
And so when we do influencer campaigns, like, we want to approach it in the same way, where that product is very seamlessly woven into the story of your life, and it's not like coming out of left field. And I've heard from a lot of other influencers all around the world that, you know, that's not the way it is everywhere else. And they've, you know, in hard times have felt pressure to accept a campaign that they didn't believe in because yeah. they needed the money or yeah. whatever. And I think, you know, we are trying to change that so that that's not the case.
Yeah.
It's tough, but I think we're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
We really are.
Well, you guys are doing a great job.
Well, we're trying. We're trying. I want to keep on that because there's like, so we talk kind of like where it's been, where like the influencer marketing place has
come
from. Yeah.
Industry has come from, where it is now,
yeah.
where is it going? Because...
Okay.
TikTok, Generation Z,
mm-hmm.
all of these things that are, it's kind of changing in that, like, the millennials are here, like,
yeah.
been here for a long time. Generation Z is, like, coming up and has
mm-hmm.
been here, and, like, TikTok's happening. Where do you think bloggers, like, everyone on the roster fits in now? Where do we have to, like, evolve in the coming, like,
I think it's good to evolve. Like, I saw a lot of people who had, you know, in terms of, like, the word bloggers, like,
mm.
who had blogs.
Mm-hmm.
who I knew from 10 years ago
mm.
in my career, who now are completely irrelevant
mm.
because they were like, no, it's all about my blog. I'm not going to do this like Instagram thing. And, or it was like a YouTuber who was like, I'm not going to do this Instagram thing. And then it's just like, they, you know,
yeah.
I don't know where they are now. So I think it's good to evolve and it's good to try new things. Like, you guys are constantly trying new things. And I think that's how you stay. I mean, if you live by Instagram, you die by Instagram.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I had a blog that had 500,000
mm-hmm.
Page views a month,
mm-hmm.
and then Google changed their algorithm because I was doing all this SEO and I had it set up perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Google changed their algorithm, and then I was getting 30,000,
mm-hmm.
you know, a month. And so my ad revenues went way down.
Mm-hmm.
And so overnight, I was actually on vacation. I lost, like, whatever opportunity that was.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live by something, you die by it. And I think that you know, doing a few things, like if you want to embrace TikTok or if you want to do YouTube and Instagram and Twitter, I think it helps with the longevity of your career if, you know, the people listening want to be influencers, or creators or digital storytellers. But I think with TikTok, like, a lot of brands are asking about it. They're like, well, how do we get involved? Or like, how does it work? And I think we'll see a lot of branded content on TikTok because you can be so creative. But like Snapchat. Who's on Snapchat?
Yeah, right.
But it was, it really, like, it was a huge ad. Like, they were making, they were pulling in so much in ad revenues because there was so many opportunities to place an ad on Snapchat, more so than Instagram at the time. So they were doing great. And then, you know, where are they now?
Yeah.
So I think it's always good to sort of, you know, do a few things. But in terms of the future, I always say to everybody that, like, it's like, you know, once the car was invented, did we go back to, like, horse-drawn carriages? Well, no. Social media is here to stay. Now that we communicate via social media, I don't think we're ever going to do it any other way unless something, you know, even cooler happens in the future. But now that we have it, it's not like the internet came and then we were like, in 10 years, that internet thing, I'm not sure about it. So now I think social media will continue on for a very, 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 very long time. It ain't going anywhere. And the word influencer is simply a term for celebrity on the internet.
Right.
So, like, it's not like, oh, you know, movies were great and we got celebrities from that, but I think that's over now. No, celebrities are still here. Influencers will still be here. There's going to be different types of influencer, like a TikTok influencer or whatever the next social media thing is. Mm-hmm. But it's now here. Like, that's just what it is. It's the world we're going to live in for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I just think people need to, you know, understand that.
And I feel like in my mind, I look up more to people who I follow on Instagram who look like me, who are like me, than a celebrity from a TV show or a movie or anything like that. Because, I mean, for me, the first time I ever actually saw anybody who looked like me from where I was from, sounded like me, was Tan France on Queer Eye. And then I now follow him on Instagram, and he's like such a personable human being.
Yeah.
And so many people say that to me. And I find that so strange because, I mean, I grew up with in a very multicultural city, but in terms of celebrities or, like, public figures, I didn't see anybody that looked like me, especially not gay either, so I didn't know it was okay. I always saw white gay people. I grew up watching TV, and there were only white gay couples on the TV, and I was like, it's cool. Like, and so in my mind, I know it's a really weird thing to say, but I never saw myself, like, as not white, which is a really strange mindset when you're young. And so all my white friends that I had, I didn't see myself as any different from them. And it's only, like, growing up and, like, not receiving some of the opportunities that I thought maybe I should have received, and really thinking back on some of the things that, like, hindered my growth in, like, a specific industry or moving up in whatever, I realized how much of a problem it was. So my very long-winded question to you is, in a world of white men, how do you, like, stay level-headed and, like, hopeful and persevere and succeed, clearly? And what advice can you give to young people of color, young women of color who want to do well in this goddamn white busted fucking world?
I know. And, you know, sometimes I feel like a responsibility that I need to be there, like, with my hand out, being like, come on, get on the train with me. Right. Come on, we're all going to go together. And, you know, I never, when there's, like, a young, you know, a girl who, like, emails me and, like, I'm like, looks like a brown name. I'm like, I'm 100% going for coffee. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's just, like, I see myself, you know, in them, and I'm like, no, I want you to be part of this. And I think it's really up to us to, like, you know, help each other get to that place. But, oh my God, like, I can't even tell you. I was, like, really, okay, because I grew up, my dad was an entrepreneur. My brother is 10 years older. He was an entrepreneur. I saw them run businesses. I was there for everything. I was at the offices. I sat in on meetings. I understood how to run a business. Like, I understood things that my resume, like, what it looked like, you know, didn't match, like, my understanding of things and what my schooling was, right? So when I would get a job, they look at my resume and they'd be like, okay, you're hired for this job. And then I would get to the office and I would have these opinions and these ideas and I'd want to share them in meetings. And my older male white colleagues would be like, you don't know anything about this. And I would be like, well, if you like spent any time with me and asked me any questions or got to know me, you would know that I actually know quite a lot about this. So I would always be like really sure about my ideas. And so people, when I got into a meeting, it was like, oh, Sarah's going to go off. Like, it's just, here we go. She's got all these ideas. And the older white males around me would like, just like, I would have concrete ideas. We can do this with like, you know, stats to back it up, everything. I would come with a perfect idea. And then a guy would come in and he would just spit a bunch of jargon, you know, like that he read in Adweek. And then everyone would be like, wow, what a great idea. Say my idea like wasn't worth their time. 6 months down the road, they're like, what if we did this? And then my idea would happen.
Cool.
And so I was just like, okay. So like, I'm never the first choice, but I'm always the one that they end up going with in the end. So I was able to like get, you know, through that way. Like I always knew I was always going to be underestimated. I knew that I was going to be told no the first time every time. But I knew that whatever that guy's idea was going to fail.
Right.
Because he just spit a bunch of jargon he read in an article 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But my idea actually made sense. So it was just a lot of like patience and waiting for people to realize I was right. And then just like working my ass off.
Yeah.
So I would just, like, I had so much energy, and I would just work my ass off. And I knew that I started to have, like, influence in the jobs that I had because I would, and, like, showed that I was very capable, that, like, I would see if I would get to work and I'd sit at my desk, there would start to be, like, a lineup in front of my desk of people who would have, like, questions or ideas or stuff to share with me. And so I think like the higher ups or the white men above me would start to see that and be like, well, everyone's going to Sarah. Everyone's talking to Sarah, wants to bounce her idea off Sarah. So maybe she does know something.
Mm-hmm.
So it took such a long time to prove that, like all of that, even though I had those ideas day one, that I like had something to say. I had to prove myself. I never ever walk into a room and someone's like, she's going to say something smart.
Mm-hmm.
Never, mm-hmm. ever, ever, ever. Yeah. It's always like, oh my God, you're really bright.
Right.
Like a surprise.
I get that sentence, oh my God, you're really bright, every week.
That's so fucking really condescending.
It's so condescending. It's, oh my God, like, but whatever. Yeah. I mean, the greatest thing is my job now is all about negotiating, so no one sees me coming.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks they can, like, you know, and everyone is so candid with me because they don't think I'm gonna, like, you know, and then I come in and I'm like, okay, here's what I want, and they're like, holy S-bomb. Like, I did not think
I remember, actually, before we even moved to Toronto, maybe, like, it was, like, the first campaign that you ever did, or one of the first campaigns you ever did, and you were negotiating for him, and then he showed me an email. I think it was before we moved.
Was
it? I can't remember, but do you remember?
I don't remember.
So,
vaguely.
You sent an email to someone, and you CC'd him into it, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to meet her!
Oh my God, I need to look at my old email and find that.
Oh God,
yeah,
no,
that's when I knew you were a badass and a force to be reckoned with.
You know, it's so funny, speaking of like the woman thing, do you know how many times I've been told, like, because, like, I'm not afraid to be, oh God, I hate this, but like a bitch. I guess that's what I'm called when I'm assertive.
Mm-hmm.
But I, like, someone once said, like, you're hard to work with. And it never, like, I never, ever, ever forgot this because I've heard it twice in my career. And I thought, like, I'm painfully nice to everyone. Like, I never impose.
Nope.
Like, and I'm just always, I feel like, fair.
Mm-hmm.
And so to hear that, I was just, like, hard to work with in what, and I really thought about, like, the who it was saying that and, like, why they would have said that. And it was, A, because I spoke up, because I, you know, told the truth. Like, I'm like trying to think of, like, what was it that was hard to work with? I just think it was, like, hard for them to get their mind around the fact that I was smart. Like, I don't know what it was. So I think I've been told, like, oh, you're, like, don't be too aggressive or don't be hard to work with or whatever. And I've just, like,
no one says that to a man.
I've
no
just blown, like, I've just been like, I honestly don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And luckily, I have to say, the industry we're in, there's a lot of women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've found that I've used, not, I mean, used is a weird word, but yeah, maybe use the fact that there is a lot of women to my advantage in that, like, I honestly get along way better with women. Mm-hmm. And so I can, like, go for coffee with a girl and we can chat, and it just, it feels so much more comfortable mm-hmm. than when I go to coffee with, you know, a male. Yeah, and so I just find that I've used those female connections in my career, and, like, I'd rather work with a brand that has a female, you know, rep yeah. than anyone else. So that's sort of the relationships and the clients that we have tend to be mostly women because yeah. that's who I've just yeah. been comfortable with, networking with. So, I mean,
which is a shame, because, like, if men didn't suck so bad, they'd also get to partake in this joy too.
Why are men great till they have to be great?
Oh my god!
But it's just it is.
We went to see Michelle Obama last week speak, and she was incredible. And one of the questions that she was asked on stage was how she got to where she is, how she used her voice through the careers that she's had mm-hmm. To, I don't know, excel in them. And she said, like, working her way through, like, the toughest parts of it, getting a seat at the table, but not just putting forward everyone else's ideas or agreeing with everyone else's ideas, but putting forward your opinion, no matter how crazy it sounds, no matter how, I don't know, like, unconventional it might be, because that's the reason you have a seat at the table. And I feel like a lot of people need to know that.
Oh, at my last job, I pitched the idea of this business. I was like, you know what? I think we need to have, like, an influencer network or an agency, because I don't know how long these magazines are going to be around for. And I think we need to, like, you know, and I was told, like, no, you know, you can't trust influencers. Like, they're here today, they're gone tomorrow. I don't know. It doesn't sound like steady enough of an income. Yeah. So I don't think it's a good idea. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it myself.
That is, yeah. that's why.
Because I didn't know anything, right? Yeah. So I was like, you know what? That's the one time I was very happy to be underestimated.
Mm-hmm. What pushed you then? Like, okay, one of my last questions is really, what pushed you? Because I feel like, for me, I've gone from, like, job to job to job, not really knowing where I belonged career-wise, and I had photography as a hobby, and then I was doing it kind of, like, amateur. And then I got to a point last year where I was like, no, enough is enough. Other people's bullshit is just not worth it anymore. Mm. And then I nosedived. And here I am. And what was your thing?
Exactly. Like, almost the same. Right. So I had a really, like, cushy job. Like, I was going to Fashion Week. I was, you know, getting fully, like, paid for trips. I was getting free shit all the time. Like, being a magazine editor is a wonderful job. I was getting paid well. But it was, like, every day it was that, like, you don't know what you're talking about. And I was just like, oh, my God, I do. And it was this constant, like, frustration of, I know what I'm talking about. And I watched so many people who were, I hope they don't listen to this, but who weren't doing as much as I was in terms of, like, work and ideas and, like, things that were turning out to be successful. Like, my ideas kept turning out to be successful and theirs weren't. And they were getting the promotions mm-hmm. because of age, because of gender. And I just thought, like, okay, well, why am I not getting these promotions? So I just felt like I was really stuck. And, you know, I'd gone through a really terrible breakup where I wasn't good enough because I didn't want to be, like, a stay-at-home domestic mom. Like, I had my mm-hmm. own dreams. I didn't want to always have to, you know, be pushing other people's, you know, dreams. I wanted to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I was going through both of those things. And so I went through that breakup. I was like, I just powered through, went back to work. But I guess I was just so unhappy. And I didn't realize it until I landed myself in the hospital with a panic attack.
God.
My whole family was on holiday at the time. They, like, got a call that I was in the hospital. Everyone freaked out. My brother came back and he's like, stay with me for 2 weeks. Just take time off work. Like, let's just hang out. So I told the job I was at, I was like, I need 2 weeks off. And I went and I stayed with my brother. And my brother is an entrepreneur, a successful entrepreneur with a web firm, who I always have looked up to. And he's like, what about that idea you had with the influencer network or agency? And I was like, oh yeah, it's such a good idea. And he's like, well, why don't you do it? And I'm like, well, like, what? I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, I'm like, should I just, maybe I'll go and do my MBA. And he's like, you're going to spend $80,000 to do an MBA? Like, yeah, you know what to do. And so we talked for those 2 weeks, and Alexander Kenton, who is also on our agency, he had been telling me, him and Justine Iaboni, who is his now wife, had been telling me for like weeks, like, Sarah, I think you'd be a better manager than our manager, and like, you should start an agency. So it was like everyone around me was saying it, but I didn't believe it yet. And then I, at the time, was dating Mr. Daniel Ocean, but now is my best friend and my business partner. But he was also in my ear, like, I have your back on this. Right. Like, I think we can do this. And so I did it because I had a support system of people who believed in me before I even believed in myself. I honestly didn't think I had it in me. I didn't even know the power that I had. And I had everyone else telling me, you need to do this. A, because they were worried about me. I was just in the hospital with a panic attack. And they like knew I had this great idea. And so I was like, okay, if I can get 6 influencers to say they would trust me to manage them, like, I'm going to do this. So it was like Alex, Justine, Dustin Carrington, obviously Daniel Ocean, the August Diaries, and I think, was it What We Wore? I forget who was the 6th one. And I went to all of them and I was like, okay, I'm starting this agency. Like, would you trust me? And they were all like, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? And I was like, okay.
Well, here we go.
And I quit my job. Oh my gosh. Then I was just like, and ever since then, like, I've done completely fine. Like, it wasn't that scary. And the one thing my brother said is like, it's not like you don't have kids right now. Like, you have nothing like else to do. Like, and like, you're so young.
Might as well.
He's like, you're not in like huge debt. Like, just, you know, whatever. And so we started it with our, so Daniel and I went into business together to start Platform Media. We started with our laptops. We didn't have an office. Mm-hmm. We had zero money that we had to put down. So we didn't need investors. Mm-hmm. And we just did it. And it was so, it's been so much fun. And so I guess, okay, but I will say, disclaimer, I will say, our business idea worked because there was no money down. We weren't starting a spa or a like a gym or like whatever where you have to spend like hundreds of thousands of dollars to build the place to put stuff in. So it was very easy to get to a point of like being comfortable.
Right.
Whereas if you're starting a business that you're now going to have to invest a lot of money into, like, my best friend owns it, like, just opened Dropboxing.
Yeah.
I am incredibly like inspired and admire her so much because that is insane. So I will say that we were very lucky because we found a business idea that we could build from the ground up without needing loans, without needing investors. Yeah. It's not always the case. So if you are thinking of starting a business like you guys did, you were able to build it from the ground up. So definitely, like, if you're sitting here and you're wondering like, what are my next steps? Like, think about those things because I think that's really important. But if you do have the support system, then open your spa.
Open that spa. What is the, we could probably end on this one. What is the, your go-to piece of advice for someone who is either A, going into the creative world, or B, starting their own business, or all the above?
Okay. A lot of people come to me and want to be influencers, so I'll start with that. Who are you influencing? What do you have to say? Do you have the trust of your audience? Do you have an audience? Like, there's a lot that comes like before the paid partnerships.
I think one of the things you once said during one of the workshops that I came to, you said meaningful content, like being meaningful and touching someone and really engaging with your community is probably one of the most important things. So, and to cultivate like hundreds of thousands of those people, that's remarkable. So,
And that's real influence. So a lot of people go, oh great, like, this person's got this, you know, they're on this trip, or this person's getting paid by this person, and I want that life. It's like, okay, are you willing to work for it? And when we did this panel, Matt, I remember an audience member asked you, they got up and they said, Matt, what, like, how much did you invest in your business? And I cut you off and I was like, can I answer for you?
Yeah, you did.
And I said, his time. Yeah, like, truly. He spends every day, I mean, probably more than 9 to 5, like, yeah, putting the work into building this following. It's not like,
especially
overnight.
At the beginning.
It's not overnight.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people just want this overnight.
Yeah.
But it takes work. And if you're willing to do the work, with anything, if you're willing to do the work, it will happen.
Mm.
You just have to be willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's something you love, you will do it. And I think with anything, you know, having a great support system is awesome, but that's not always the case. So, you know, you're your own support
yeah.
system. And there's always going to be those, like, thoughts of, like, do I fit in here? Or, like, you know, are people going to laugh? I thought everyone was going to laugh at me.
Mm.
I thought everyone was going to say, who the F does this girl think she is? But we started, we put out, like, the message, I'm starting this business, and I had so much love come back to me. And I just never in a million years thought that. So I think you will be surprised by how amazing people are and how kind they are. And I think that, you know, just go for it. Like, what do you really have to lose? So anyway, work hard,
mm-hmm.
numero uno,
yeah.
and just balls to the walls.
Yeah.
Go do it.
Wow.
I don't know. Is that good advice?
That is fantastic advice. From an influencer mom.
Yeah. I am Kris Jenner.
She is. Truly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Evie just woke up from a nap and she just realized that Sarah's still here and she's trying to eat her.
Yeah.
So I think that's the...
So
that's
our cue to leave.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining
Thank you so much.
Where can people find you?
Okay. On Instagram, it's at Sarah with no H, S-A-R-A, at K-O-O-N-A-R, Sarah Kunar.
Mm-hmm.
And Platform Media is at Platform_Media on Instagram as well.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Oh,
thank you guys.
Thank you.
You.
Wow.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast. You can find all relevant social links down in the description and make sure to follow us both on Insta at Mr. Benfield
and at Omar Takes Pics, and also find us on YouTube at Matt and Omar. If you feel so inclined, leave us a little review on whatever you're listening to the show on, because that would be cute. And we'll see you back here next Monday.
Bye.
Bye.